Welcome to Coming Up for Air, the Allies in Recovery podcast, with hosts Laurie McDougall, Kayla Solomon, and Dominique Simone Levine.
Morning, ladies.
Morning. Hello.
Morning.
So today's topic, what we're going to talk about today is something we're calling the one-offs. And what we mean by this is there's a lot of people that are maybe unsure about where to go, or maybe not confident about what the right path is when they're looking for how do I learn to cope, or how do I deal with a loved one living or impacted by substance use disorder, and are not necessarily kind of committed to a particular program, and they're trying this from here and that from there and pulling from over here. And then they find out that, things aren't working, or maybe they're not really committed to the program. Like I see a lot of family members that they'll come on, they'll kind of dabble in the video modules that we offer, and they'll dabble in it a little bit, or they'll try something, it works out well, things calm down, they don't go back to the videos for a while, and then 3 weeks later, they find themselves in the middle of some kind of chaotic episode, and then they panic, and then they go back to the website. What are your thoughts on that? What do you think? Like Kayla and Dominique, what do you think about that? I know what my thoughts are, and we can get into it, but go ahead, Dominique.
Well, from a business standpoint, I've seen this for years where families sign up for our program, they do a little work, then it goes quiet, then they cancel. 3-4 months later, they want to come back on. So I've even thought of like a pause button where, you know what, if this is all too much, if you don't want to hear about this stuff, if you can't come to a meeting, you can't read anything, you're whatever's going on with you, rather than cancel and give up, just hit a pause button, take a little time, but be able to come back. So anyway, I see it sort of on a quantitative basis. I see it in terms of our membership. We have thousands of people that have come through our program, and I have some trends, and that is one of them. And I would like to solve it by offering a pause. So I'm thinking about a pause in terms of the big picture from what you're describing in terms of the individual. In terms of that individual committing to anything, what percentage actually do of any of us, right? And that's what you're saying. If you can't take this program bit by bit, leave it, and come back and expect it to work as well as it can work. And I'm a big fan of daily practice. And even if it's the smallest thing, try and have a craft moment every day, and you won't forget that you're learning craft. And you'll come up against things that will either stump you or surprise you in the positive response that you get. And so it's about consistency. And I'm reminded with Brian Cerna from New Mexico. He said, you know, after 25 years of doing craft, what's the single biggest thing he would say to families? And that is consistency, consistency.
Well, and I also think that anytime we're trying to accomplish anything, we're up against a lot of obstacles. It's easy to go back to the old way of doing things. It's really easy to give up because everything feels like a struggle. It feels like you're, as they say in lots of places, you're a beginner, so that you're not very good at it, and you try things and they fail. And it's really hard not to give up at that point, or just feeling like you don't have the time to do this, because what we're asking for actually takes time and attention and focus. And when you feel like the priority is dealing with a crisis, you don't have time to slow down and pause and back up. You're just going to do things and, you know, basically react and, you know, make decisions. And I guess the most important message that we have is if you want things to continue the way they are, just keep doing what you've been doing. If you want change, you have to make a change. But change does not happen quickly. You need to learn what you're doing. You need to practice it. Like Dominique said, you need to try and fail and not give up, because we're doing a parallel process to the loved one, okay? They try to get clean, things get rough, they just go right back, because it is really hard to get clean if you've been using for a long time. Abstinence, stopping, whatever the words are, it's like, it's really hard to stop a habit. That is clear to everybody. So whether it's a substance or a behavior, it's hard to stop. And what we're asking you to do is take a pause, because I think that is the way to start, and then really, really take things apart so you have choices, and then you have the ability to make changes, but it's not fast.
I think there's a whole host of things that are going on here when we do that. When we get involved, we start, we try, we stop, we're overwhelmed, we can't do this. I think there's a large crowd that don't buy in. They don't buy in. Then there's a large crowd that's not sure. Well, do I go with a tough love? Do I go with this? What's going to work? And then there's never a commitment. And I also think that we are forced to have to deal with this. It isn't something that we enjoy. So practicing this is like 10 times harder. So if I like to play the piano, I'm going to practice it more and I want to get better. I'm going to practice it more. I'm going to spend time doing it because I enjoy it. And the more I practice at it, the better I'm going to get. This, you know, learning craft, although I do enjoy pieces of it, to be honest with you, but that's who I am. There's more people out there that don't enjoy trying these things. So it's not an enjoyable thing that you're practicing. It's a really complicated thing that's going to bring on a lot of incredibly challenging feelings and emotions, and it's going to bring you up, it's going to bring you down, and you're going to get frustrated. And then here you have three women sitting here saying, you've got to commit to it, and you've got to stick with it, and you've got to practice. And then over time, you're going to get better at it. And over time, things will improve, no matter what happens, whether your loved one stops using completely, moderates use, or doesn't, or, you know, has a recurrence, whatever the journey is or the path is, things can improve. But yep, you're right. It's doing something that is incredibly difficult to do. But I would recommend, if you're going to do it, try and commit to it. Really spend time doing it. And actually, it's not all that beneficial to do the one-offs. You know, all those, well, now I have this problem, so now I'll watch this module, or I won't. I'll just panic and I'll say, oh, it doesn't work. It doesn't work. Well, how would you know?
And what happens is, okay, I better go back to tough love. I was right the first time. I'm going to throw them out. You have to commit to not only doing craft, but staying with craft, not jumping around to other programs, which there aren't many anyway, or other theories, which there aren't many anyways. I mean, Al-Anon has a bent towards having you, the family member, go through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, with, instead of you having the problem with alcohol, you have the problem with your loved one with addiction. And I can't manage it. It's out of control. I need a higher power in order to bring me back to sanity. I mean, all of that is Al-Anon. It's beautiful. I've attended for years. It's important. But 90%, I'll tell you, almost 90%, I'd say, over the years, of people in Al-Anon don't have an active situation of addiction in their lives. They come because they're the children of somebody who used and were brought up in the world of addiction. They come into because they've got partnerships that are difficult, where the person's no longer using, but other things. It's a beautiful program for self-insight and improvement. It does very little in terms of action for your loved one. So, or you could go to Tough Love. Tough Love, some of you may know, is basically, you know, you just have to cut them out and let them sort of dangle on their own. Eventually, maybe they'll end up on your doorstep. And that's true for some. 6 months later, your loved one shows back up on their doorstep and yay, yay, tough love. Now, I'm pretty critical of tough love, because tough love is a part of what craft does, because tough love is behavior. It is a strategy. You know, the strategy is they have to leave home, but there is no way that we allow families to say, okay, you got to leave home, without a plan, options, a conversation, partnership with connection and communication with your loved one. It's a whole different ball game. So when you're looking at craft, and I look at it strategically over the big picture, over your entire family, not your day-to-day so much, but what you're looking to do is to stay consistent with the theory and the very, very solid theories that are behind craft, that say behavior modification, your own behavior modification is going to change your loved one's behavior.
I think practicing with the loved one who has substance use issues is the hardest thing that we're asking people to do. And my belief is that you start using the skills in the rest of your life for the real practice, so that, you know, I think that this is just basic relationship skills that we're talking about with most people. So it's like, if somebody does something nice to you, for you and with you, or you're noticing that they're doing well, you acknowledge it. If you're having a conflict with somebody, how do you know what to do in those moments? How do you process it? How do you step out and not make it worse? How do you communicate with people? How do you have self-care? How do you, when something is difficult, change the way you're thinking about it? How do you stop negative self-talk? How do you stop negative talk with other people? How do you notice the positive? So my belief is that if you could take the skill set that we're providing and the tools that we're talking about and just start attending to them in your whole life, they become a practice for you. They become a way of engaging with people. They become this way that you are in the world. And then when things get difficult, they're part of your repertoire. You don't want to learn something when you're in a crisis, because you can't just pull it out. Your old ways just come flapping up. But if you start having a practice, then you can think to yourself, okay, which tool should I use right now? Which tool should I use? And they're in your pocket.
I'm hoping we can also take a look at tough love. There is another thing about tough love. I can't stand the term, to be honest with you. And I think because it's so darn ambiguous, because tough love means something totally different from one person to the next. So if we're going to talk about tough love, or, and I don't mean here and now because we are talking about tough love, but if you're going to promote tough love, then you better be pretty specific in what you're talking about. It should be defined for everybody, because someone might say, oh, I believe in tough love, but I use craft, and that is tough love. It's tough love for me because it's really tough for me to hold my boundaries, right? Versus someone else says, well, I believe in tough love, and that means I'm going to cut off all connection until they go into recovery. And that's it. I don't want to have anything to do with them. I don't like, and maybe another day we can do the whole trope thing, but tough love, I don't like it because it isn't well defined. Craft is a great structure.
And tough love is simply not theoretically backed up. It is a part of behaviorism. And it is the part that says, step away, allow natural consequences, remove rewards. That's what tough love, that the program tough love asks you to do. They don't say it that way. They don't have the other side. What do you do when there's no use or low use or moderation? They completely cut out the other part of the theory. So it's not theoretical. It doesn't stand up. That's why we've always used craft. I've always followed the work of researchers that have studied this and come up with the very best pieces of theories, and that put together created a very strong family program, the strongest family program, the only one that meets a signature of an evidence-based program.
Well studied. And if people really take a look at the craft skills and the craft strategies, it really is based in well-proven psychological principles that are backed up by science, backed up by data for a lot of different methods. So like motivational interviewing, really motivational interviewing, a lot of the craft skills kind of come out of that. Or I'm just trying
cognitive
to think.
Cognitive behavioral therapy.
Yeah. Cognitive behavioral therapy, like the interactive skills of reinforcing positive behavior and then withdrawing immediate rewards, allowing for natural consequences. Those are all based in well-proven, well-studied principles that we know work rather well, versus tough love that's not well-defined, isn't really some kind of a structure, and people just kind of make their own decisions about what that means. And that leads to, yeah, it might work. It might work in some cases. It does work, although I would really question, does it work? And what does it work to do? Because I think it's really important to think about that in terms of when people say, I use tough love and it worked. My loved one went into recovery. and it was the best thing I ever did. And I'm like, well, I don't think that's what put your loved one into recovery, to be honest with you. I think what put your loved one into recovery is they learned about themselves and what was going to work. And what, and I think that's true with craft as well. Like, my practicing craft is not what determines my loved one's recovery. All that I was able to do with craft was set up an environment where he was supported and maybe guided in a direction that was more positive, and he was more likely to work on his recovery.
Well, and what's our focus? Okay, what are we really talking about here is that, and I just want to point out that we had this discussion this past week, and one of the parents was talking and talking about the situation. And then she, I could watch the light bulb go on top of her head. And she basically said, oh, it's my work to feel emotionally safe. It's my work to figure out what the next step is. It's my work to work on myself. And why do we have such a focus on that? And the focus is that if you can change how you look at things, how you engage, how you think about things, you automatically have an influence on everybody else in your life. It's just inevitable. It's just the way, it's a basic structural dynamic with people. If one person changes, the other people have no choice but to change. It's basic. And so we're asking you to focus on yourself and learn more about what you're thinking, what your choices are, what your reactivity is about, what you're noticing, how you act around your loved one and various behaviors, what you could do differently, what works, what doesn't work, and how do you stay in and just practice these things. But ultimately, what winds up being the side effect of this is that you get to change and grow and work on yourself, even in the midst of this horrendously chaotic situation and horrendous crisis that you're dealing with on a regular basis. And that itself is exceptionally powerful. If not, for no other reason, you're a role model for working with yourself when things are hard.
It's funny, we've been talking a lot about this in the meetings lately. And one of the things that I hear over and over again is, oh my God, they're such a liar. They manipulate me. I'm so, oh, but it just sitting around trying to manipulate me and did it and that kind of thing. And I often will say, okay, wait a minute. So when they're talking to you, you know you're being manipulated. Yep. Okay. So now whose responsibility is it to not be manipulated? Yours, not your loved ones. It is not your loved ones to stop trying to manipulate you because you don't want to be manipulated. It is your responsibility to protect you and to set up that emotional boundary. So if you feel that you're being manipulated or lied to, you make decisions based on that. And it is your job to protect yourself from that. And so you make decisions based on that. And you're being a role model. You're showing your loved one, look, this behavior is unacceptable, so I'm not going to accept it. I'm going to set up a boundary. I'm going to walk away. I'm going to say no to the money, or I'm going to, nope, I'm uncomfortable with that, not happening, and you walk away. But it makes it your taking responsibility for your own emotions and managing yourself, and your loved one is going to have to figure it out as well. What it does is it gives your loved one the opportunity to maybe for one of the first times in their lives, start to cope and deal with their own emotions, because they're going to get upset, right? Because they're not getting the typical relief that they want. But let's go back to the original discussion, because what we're basically saying is that it's really important when you get into the program of CRAFT or when you join the Allies in Recovery website, take advantage of the and commit to the program. Don't do these one-offs, right? It's just not going to be as impactful. You're going to end up finding yourself running, you know, back and forth and back and forth. Nope, commit to the program. Commit to it. Really, really start implementing, like pick one skill at a time. Understand that it's going to be a lot of practice and it's going to take time. It isn't going to be, you're not going to learn everything in 2 weeks. I had a mom come in this past week to one of the meetings, and she said, I'm just overwhelmed with not knowing what to do. And she said she listened to our podcast and was really thankful that we had said, pick one or two skills. Don't try and implement it all at once, because she said she was overwhelmed. But what I'm really glad is she's committed. She's committed and she's trying. So, Kayla.
All right. So we're talking about one-offs. And basically, if you're wanting to shift this, do not do this like you're a popcorn popper. Okay. You got to pick one thing and stay focused and track it and learn it and keep practicing and let it get underneath your skin so that it becomes part of you. And the more you focus on one thing at a time, which by the way is ironic because the whole 12-step thing is one day at a time. That's the same thing as you try one thing at a time, one day at a time, focus, focus, focus. You don't look at the long game. You look at this next piece because you don't have control over the long game. You have control over what you're practicing, what you're learning, what you're taking in, and how that changes how you think about things and how you operate. And that's the power of this. So don't get frustrated if it doesn't work. You're just going to practice the skill as frequently and as often as possible with anybody you possibly can. And then you will start to see the changes.
Okay, thank you, ladies.
Thanks for listening. We hope this episode of Coming Up for Air spoke to you. If you're listening in today on a podcast platform that isn't the Allies member site, please take a moment to give us a 5-star rating. This helps others find the show more easily. If you have a suggestion for a new topic or a guest for the show, please reach out through the Contact Us form on alliesinrecovery.net. Special thanks to our hosts, our guests, and our production team.